And people on Facebook are looking for the owners of a garage that was left in Lincoln County Forest. Photos circling on Facebook are asking if anyone recognizes the garage left in the county forest off of Swamp Road near Tomahawk. The owners of anyone with information should contact the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office or the Lincoln County...
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay Bird, the ghost of Dick Stemke, lives.
It lives in the North Woods 24/7, I guess. 24/7,
right? Folks. Not only would he take your lawn and garden equipment, he'll steal your entire garage.
You can never have enough when you're a klepto, I guess, right? Well, I'm telling you, it just keeps increasing.
Listen, we did not make that up. Somebody stole an entire garage and then dumped it on Swamp Road?
Like some public forest somewhere up here. Yeah. I don't know exactly where. It's true. It's a true story.
I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure there. We had to bring that up. Guys, talk about funky. Last week did the podcast, put it up, and then had a problem with a corrupt file on a server the next day. So some people heard it, some people didn't. We apologize. I just couldn't get it back up, as they say.
Couldn't recover it, right?
I can't get it back up, Jay. it was down for the count, if you will. It was a tech error. And so we apologize. It was like, okay, by the time I realized it was in the middle of the week, and back here we are again, nonetheless. So we're going to couple, if you heard it on Monday, you're going to hear a couple things again, at least with some baits that everybody else hasn't heard. The comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop, which are CC Lures. What is it? The D&R Dive and Rise. This guy is making some cool stuff. I think Jody Michael told me, didn't you have a video with this cat, Jay?
Yeah, a few. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, these are handmade cedar jerkbaits. Three models, right? There's a 7.5 and there's a 9-inch. Mm-hmm. Two of them have these little blades on the back, so there's some video action of that up, and I've got one coming out soon with the softtail version, but replaceable weight system. They're basically a dive and rise into the side action. Mm-hmm. Quality. Podcaster John came in the other day. Mm-hmm. He must have bought three of them.
They're pretty.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Really good. Excellent quality. Really love the paintwork that guy.
I was blown away.
It's good. Colin did on that. They did a great job.
It's one of those cool things where, you know, you love a custom bait here and now and again, and this guy's kind of hand doing them.
Small batch.
He's got the
Yipper.
He's doing the hand work, Jay.
Yep.
He's doing the job by hand. He's doing he's got the little blade on the back there. Looks cool. I dig him.
Yep, me too.
It's like pop smacks me diggy diggy. Anyway, looking here. Jay. When you're going to the fridge and you're going to snap a Pepsi out of the fridge, right? You're going to pop the top on a fresh Pepsi.
Right, because it's got to be cold, so you go to the fridge. It's got to be cold,
so you need your magnet. Refrigerator.
Right.
Oh, I had to set that.
3D magnet.
3D. After enough Pepsis, it's 4D. Anyway, they got the Muskie Shop magnet. I like it. I like it. Of cockle, better than that, goofing on that.
Something, we got a few calendars left, not a lot. If you need a calendar for next year, awesome artwork, not many
huge,
left.
Huge discounts. Guys, listen, I'm going to tell you, this is the biggest discount of the year, Jay. Are you ready? I have approval from Jim Stewart, right? 90% off 2024 calendars, Jay.
Okay.
By the time you get it in the mail, that bad boy will set you up for a couple weeks. It really will.
Yeah, you get a good week and a half out of that thing. So, you know, you can look at 1 month. Yeah.
Yeah, get the most out of it. 2024 calendars on sale, I promise. Now, 2025, 2025 calendars. He's got those. Something else that's kind of... one man's, you know, I don't want to say trash because it's not that, but people are like, oh, it's new to you, new to me. A bait some of you may have known about and some of you don't. So we're going to call it new. And it's been at the Muskie Shop before, but it's back. guess who's back? Back again. Red October Boo Tubes.
Yeah.
And this is, if you like the tinsel and you like the rubber, you like flashy rubbers, Jay.
Yep. And you got a tail gunner too, yeah, built in.
Tail gunner. Yep. There you go. It's a tube. It's not stuffed with flash boot. They're two pieces, right? They're not just mm-hmm. jamming it in there. It's flash boot that's molded in there for a different look on a tube. But they got the 9-inch and what is there, 11? Okay.
Correct them anew.
Correct. Well, I'll tell you what. The one thing, I have not thrown this, but if you were notoriously fishing somewhere where they're just tail grabbing tubes, that'd be a nice option, because not going to tear up quite like a plastic skirt. You know what I'm saying? If they're always tail gunning, always tail grabbing there. So that's an interesting thing. Jay Bird, just been on a freaking trolling tear, son.
Have you?
Just nightmare fiesta for them out there. It's been good. It's been good, good, good. And checking out a couple things here. That freaking Grandma M9, the new one.
Yep, you sent me a picture.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to tell Jay about it. This is kind of juicy stuff. And I did the math on it, right? So here it is. It's cumulatively 5 in the boat, right? 22 hours of trolling, right? Which is not bad, really, when you break it down. But conditions, I mean, we're talking iced up. And, you know, the podcast we've been doing, we talk about ice, and we did the Herbie one the other day, and all la, 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 right? Mm-hmm. I've just been living by it the last couple of days, because it has been 18, 20, 22, you know what I'm saying, for the majority of the morning. Oh, yeah.
Holy cow.
You know, just absolutely positively everything we're talking about, and, you know, a couple new things popping ahead, but it has been a can of WD-40 on the boat has been a godsend.
Sure, sure.
And I'll tell you, it's something, I don't know if we mentioned it when I was talking to Herbie, me and him rarely remember our conversations, but like literally using as much like real grease or Vaseline on those line paws as you possibly can. Had a freeze up the other day, had a couple reels get kooky, and something else that I realized, and at least on the Daiwas I'm using for my line counters, there's a little bit of a opening where you push the button for the reset of the counter, right? So you push the button up or down, or you push buttons in, right? Well, guess what? Moisture will get in there and freeze the numbers, Jay. So I had it happen on two reels the other day. We had freezing, like kind of misty fog, right? So the water's obviously warmer than 18, and you get this freezing mist at sunrise, and guess what it did? So started spraying a tiny bit of WD actually in through where you would reset the button. So I'm pushing the button down and just giving mm-hmm, a little mm-hmm. blast just to keep some water displacement, you know, water dispersion with that, because I actually had that freezing up. I'm like, I don't know how far the baits are out. We're just gonna go with it. But oh my god!
Right. Because for those that don't know, WD-40 is not a lubricant; it's a water dispersant.
Yeah, doing stellar. Jim Belay, the tube screamer himself, said you got to try these out. Let me know what you're thinking here. What's the deal? How they working for you? Spanky Baits M9. And I put 22 hours on them, and they look like they don't even look like they've been trolled. Like a lot of baits, you'll get a lot of hook rash really fast.
Correct.
And that kind of time, that's a good amount of time on a bait to see what it'll do. So totally blown away by that. I knew I liked them before, but that was kind of a nice thing to see. Heck yeah, they're doing
yeah, for
stellar.
Sure.
You know, oh, talk about freaking circus though, Jay. And we'll have to do it, because we're definitely trolling videos. And actually, I talked to Jim, actually, when I talked to you earlier today, I said I got a beep. It was Jim calling about something else. But he and I were talking about some video stuff. We're going to have video, you know, definitely after the first of the year here, once everybody settles down, Jay. Once you've done, what is it? What's the, you've done with the everybody's done with their New Year's festivities, right? They're done. Yeah. Yule tiding, all that. We'll have some cool instructional stuff for you to sink your proverbial teeth into over the winter. But definitely some unique trolling stuff. But it has been circus netting, Jay. The other day, go back. So I'm trolling seven rods, right? Got my, and a little bit, let me, it's a setup, but it's not a setup. I've got the new and improved blade planer board prototypes, Jay. Everybody keeps asking about blades. We get emails, I get messages, tons of people signed up. Been working on that, right? So that's been a project. My good buddy Josh Hackensmith had actually done part of the design work on like how to actually implement them. It sort of came from a brainchild of me. He's a really good friend of mine. Got to the point where he made so many, he can't, you know, it's like every time you make something cool, a bait or whatever, you can't keep up with it, right? And it's not worth it. It's just crazy. So ended up getting them. They're going to be mass produced. Jay knows this, but I got the mass produced ones. Been running them. It's fantastic.
Good.
They're actually
good to hear.
Even better than the handmade ones we were doing. And, you know, Hackensmith is, you know, he and I just kind of said, okay, what can we tweak even on the mast produced? Because, like I said, I did the design and then we did the rough prototypes. These things started as wood, Jay. So it was, believe it or not. So started there and I went, I'm not a real great craftsman, Josh. So help me here. And we got it going.
No, you said wood. They weren't like paneling from a garage or anything, were they? How'd you get the wood? You know what I mean? You follow me?
I can't answer that question. I can't answer that question.
Okay. Enough said. I was thinking either that or maybe, you know, something Smitty did.
Smitty. I think we'll have a very Smitty Christmas next. We actually, that's what's a bummer because we freaking harassed Jake last week and now the thing was lost. But nonetheless, yeah, I'm out. I'm running with the blades on a set and doing this setup. And Jay, get up, put the boat in neutral, trolling motor, go to net, hit the icy deck, end up on my freaking knees. Right.
Oh, okay.
We got fish fighting. Now I hit my controller. Of course, every line tangles. It's just been circles. If it can go funky, it has been going funky. Landed all of them. Haven't lost one. But man, when it's icy like that and you got to move fast, you know, trying to be deliberate, but it's like, what can you do? And I of anything, I'll tell you, I don't know if I've mentioned it in a while, but if you're trolling, if you have a remote controlled trolling motor, put it in the water. That's what I always do. And it's been, I mean, there's been plenty of this, that, and the other here as of late, just because of ice and extra pain in the butt. But having that, man, put that boat in neutral and then hit go on your trolling motor. Like I usually keep it set where my trolling motor is about, you know, 3/4 of a mile, right? In speed, enough to keep things from tangling extra. So we hook up with a fish, boat goes in neutral, I hit the button and I go for the net, right? So I'm engaging my trolling motor.
Sure.
And what happened the other day, it was icy and I just hit the button, but I didn't hit north. So if you guys have that where it's like your boat will stay on a constant and it will hold its heading, you know, do that because that's what I'm doing now. But I didn't hit it the other day. And of course, now I'm on my knees and the boat is doing the old spinorama with planer boards, you know? So if you want to net a muskie, so I net the fish and he's got what, 3 baits, not in him, but like tied to the other lines. It was exciting. Let me put it that way. But yeah, that's a little tip there. We haven't covered in a while where, like, if you have that, at least on my motor with the Minn Kota, if you hit north, it's not going to hold north, like the in up, it's the heading. It's your heading. So whatever your bearing is, your actual, you know, numerical bearing, the boat will keep going in that direction. So have that handy, but don't fall on your remote and don't undo that. And then you'll spin in circles. So
there you go.
We got him. But anyway,
Steve's tip of the day.
Yeah. Don't do this, but no, it's been interesting. I mean, just really dialed in on speed and depth, but I mean, you know, just kind of a hard preference with those new grandmas, Jay. Just it's like Mark, and I've got old M9s, so I've been.
What depth are you trying to run those at?
I'll tell you that in a few weeks when that bite's over. But it's been
there. You go.
But it's been. I'm teasing. I mean, to be honest with you, when I'm running like stick baits, Jake's grandma's, I'm not really trying to get them deep, right? So my goal's kind of that 5-6 foot mark. If I need to go deeper than that, you know, so I've got. in that size. I mean, you can't apples to oranges, say like a Jake, a grandma, or a headlock. I mean, it's a whole different animal in action. But if I need to say get down deeper with that similar action, I'll probably go with a Rachel from Livingston or a Triple D, right? So if I, for a deeper application, which is like if you like next level muscle fish, I'll talk about all the time, where just I'm not worried about the bait as much as I'm worried about a short line from work control and perfect running depth, right? Because even with minnow baits and things of that nature, 99.9% of the time that the action of the bait's great, but you're going to have to be doing some triggering things with your boat to get the eat, you know? So anything deeper than about 5-6 with those flat set of minnow baits, I'm probably going to switch it out and go Triple D Rachel for that same kind of like 9-inch body. I think a Rachel and a Triple D is about 9, somewhere in that neighborhood. But that, you know, I'm not going to be trying to run a grandma like 200 feet behind the boat, 100 feet behind the boat. And if you're curious about trolling charts, I actually added a new one, speaking of trolling. Just smacked the new one on the app for the Ivan lures, Jay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, he's got that.
Yeah, Jim's been running those, very happy with them. Yeah, Jim got out earlier this week. I don't know anyone else that fished in the Northwoods Tuesday or whenever he got out. It was cold and nasty. Everything's frozen up.
Is it all locked up? They got out. Is that the end of it? Is it just locked up tighter than...
Yeah. Like Wednesday, Thursday, we had, I think it was a high of 0 on Wednesday, and, you know, 15 below like at night. What about trout? So, yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, they might have gone out there Tuesday, either tomahawk or trout, you know, some one of the bigger lakes, you know, it was open. The landing was a nightmare. Yeah. You know, they had to bring salt with them and a lot of preparatory type stuff, you know, so they could get everything out of there.
Preparatory B. Now, I'm looking here. You look at, like, the Grandma M9, the old school one, right? You know, it's going to go 20s your max. But by the time we get, I had to look here. By the time we hit 12 feet, right? So to hit 12 feet of line with a M9, we're at 88 feet from the rod tip, Jay. Right?
Mm-hmm. So
that's quite a bit of line to have any kind of triggering mechanism or contouring control. Right. So realistically for me, there's a big difference. This is what I'm looking at when it comes to trolling bait. So I'll pull up. Okay. Here's the M9. So to hit 5 feet, it's 25 feet. To hit 10 feet, it's 68. A little bit much for me. You see where I'm going for it? Where I would rather look and go, okay, I need to hit 10 feet on the shortest distance. It's not always the shortest distance, but similar size. Similar action, what's going to have a more aggressive lip to shorten things up? So when I'm doing jukes and jives and I'm kind of whipping the boat around, right, what's going to happen? So you look here, it's the depth. So line length, and that's 8. Let me find the Triple D. So what I'm comparing is overall size. Minnow baits, when they're trolled, Jay, guess what they do? They whackety-schmackety to the side from, you know, whack, 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 here we go, you know. But, I mean, you look at, like, a Legend Plow, 14 feet is 29 feet of line. Right? So a Legend Plow is going to be a little more apt to get down there. Let me see here. I'm just looking. But, you know, looking here, like the BNN Magic Claw. So I'm kind of just looking at all those same kind of style of baits and kind of working through what's going to be the easiest. You know, what's the least amount of line I have to have out here? Let's say I need to hit 8 feet. Looking here, 10-inch slammer minnow, right? 30 feet's going to get me 8-9 feet. Opposed to 80 feet, because when we're taking those tight turns, we're doing stuff like that. You want boat control, which good boat control means great bait control. Better bait control means more hookup. Speaking of hooking up, Jay, we talked to him last week. We're going to do it even better this week because last week's episode is screwy. So this is like two episodes in one. Last week, this week, every week. About to talk to Mads from Savage Gear.
Yes.
Now, listen. A lot of people mispronounce it as sausage gear. It's not. It's Savage, correct?
Depends on what country you're from.
But I read, remember that there was that Johnny Depp cologne, Sauvage Sausage.
Yeah, where he's out in the desert with like a custom Les Paul.
Yeah, Sauvage.
Yeah, you know, air guitaring. Oh, Sauvage. Man. Very artistic.
Sauvage. But anyway. Sauvage. Sauvage. So we're going to have Mads is from Savage Gear. Danny is from Sausage Gear. Agree?
It pretty much sums it up, baby.
I'm just playing with it. Anyway, here she blows. Talk about more. I set it up well, Jay. Even more technical funsies. We're sitting here. We're finally hooked up. We've got Danny on the phone. And then here very shortly, Mads is where, Danny?
I don't know where he is. Like, he's hard to keep track of. He's either
Bangkok.
He's either in Thailand or he's in China. actually, at the Savage Gear factory right now.
Jay, do you know any good Thailand jokes? Anyway,
no, so, but the crocodile fishing over there is excellent, I heard.
The crocodile. Do they have a Culver's?
Oh, big crocs.
Big crocs.
Not yet. They have McDonald's.
Had a breakdown at the Culver's in Thailand. So, anyway.
Not a place you want to blow a tranny.
Maintain your vehicles at all times. Listen, I'm just telling you, stay on top of things. He'll help you avoid costly repairs. Danny, how's the Great White North right now?
It's the Great White North, that's for sure. I mean, we're looking down 2 feet of snow. The ice conditions suck. what ice we do have is covered in slush. We got kind of off to a bad roll for the winter here. Really? Let's just say that.
Well, you do some ice guiding, correct?
Yeah, I do primarily like March, end of February, March, April is kind of when I focus it, just to around the warmer periods of the winter. Obviously the fishing's the best and the weather's usually a little bit more cooperative.
Gotcha.
And I used to do it all winter, you know, end of December, January, February, all the way through. And, you know, booking out and having people arrive on a certain day and they show up and it's 40 below and I get it. You're on vacation. You want to go fishing. Well, you know, besides being downright dangerous being out there, if something was to happen, I mean, it could potentially be life threatening, but like the cost ratio to what I can make, just the dollars and cents that would add up at 40 below, everything you touch breaks.
Oh, I would think. Yeah, I would think. I mean, I don't know anything about ice fishing is why I asked, but how would one even set up to have a moderately not suck time? Like,
well, I mean, you gotta be at that temperature. You have to be in a shack, you know, and I mean, like, you know, your portable tracks, they all have like...
What's great, Jay's already set up for that year round.
He's got heat, too.
It's got heat, too. Jay lives in a small shack behind the Northwoods Lake. So, rent's cheap. Anyway,
with a go-fast bag.
With a go-fast, yeah. And it's booby trap driveway. Just a bunch of cans and a claymore.
You've been here. Exactly.
Exactly.
Call before you stop by.
Call before you stop by.
You want to do that, Danny? Yeah, just to put it mildly. You should.
Jay's hobby in the evenings is writing letters to government officials. You know, so he gets off work and just writes some letters to congressmen and whatnot.
Anyway.
Yeah. So you're saying you got to be in a shack, but I mean, is it even tenable to be warm, or is it just misery?
Oh yeah, but I mean, you touch, like, when you're first setting up, you touch like those plastic windows and they just shatter. Like, you know, the simple things of getting your electric batteries to work on an auger or starting an auger after, because I mean, like up here, it's not like simple ice fishing like what you do in the U.S. You don't just drive to a boat landing, walk out on a lake and set up. Like, everything is back in the sticks here. Like, you know, a lot of the stuff that I might fish in the winter, you can't get a boat in the summer. Like, it's just super remote, and that's what makes it so cool. But I mean, some of the stuff is, you know, 15, 20, 30 miles back in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And, you know, things go sideways, you know, you tip a machine or something happens. I mean, it could be, you know, you got to really.
Are you primarily walleye fishing in the winter? I mean, is that the main?
Do it all. We get some really big pike, got some, you know, obviously phenomenal walleye fishing, really good lakers, and not on Eagle. Ooh. We don't have them, but you know, a lot of the lakes around here, we get really good big crappies as well.
Oh, he's on the crappies, he says. Now, that's cool. I can't imagine, like I said, that is kind of my definition of hell. Like, if you want to suffer miserably, do what you're talking about. That would suck. Anyway, Danny Matz is going to be here any second. At least he said he was. But what do you have brewing? What's kind of tooling around your brain right now? What's going to happen at Savage Gear next year?
I mean, obviously, you know, we're trying to make a really, you know, good push in the market, and, you know, not make just, you know, a little bit of noise. We're trying to make as much noise as we can.
Guys, have you heard that little brief pause there? We just heard from Mads. So we got Mads, Danny, Jay's here, everybody. So Mads, jump in the fray here. I was just asking Danny, What do you guys kind of have in store for 2025? What's kind of the master plan here with Savage going forward for this year?
Well, I think the natural progression is, you know, basically right in front of us. If you look at the lineup that we worked on for the last 2 years, you're probably going to see a really cool hard lure with a few built-in tricks. And then we're definitely doing something with top water.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Anything you can illuminate for us, or is it just you know?
I think what the most interesting thing is that we solved a few problems on some of this kind of this category of lures and musky fishing. We found a few ways to make it very adaptable on the day.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, when you're fishing these small details, they mean so much on the day, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just changing it up. And then I know Danny's just integral in that design. Danny, what's up your sleeve? You were getting started there. What's kind of up the sleeve? Where do you think how it's going to affect what we're doing in North America?
Well, and I mean, that's what's so cool about, like, working with Mads. I mean, these guys over in Europe, the way they fish, they take it to, like, a whole nother level compared to what we do over here in North America. Like, just the little subtle differences, mm-hmm. the differences in how they change baits, and, you know, some of the stuff that they do over there that we don't really acknowledge it being done in the musky mm-hmm. world especially. And some of the stuff that Mads has brought to light on just like how such subtle little differences that you wouldn't think can totally change the whole the action of the bait and what the bait does, and, you know, and get a lot more bites on a daily basis by just changing some very fine aspects to a bait, you know, just being able to make the bait cast farther and not get fouled as much. Mm-hmm. And, and once again, just, you know, having that proper weighting on that lure to get the bait down and stay down in that depth for, you know, the entire cast you know what I mean?
Right, only you're having in the it zone down there far more, yeah.
Exactly.
Putting it where it needs to be. So what would you say, I mean, you know, having both of you on here, you guys can just run with it. What would you say are, like, if someone was looking at Savage Gear, where do they start? If you're a musky angler here, what's the best place to start with Savage Gear products?
Yeah, I think Danny, you know that one of the go-to lures that you've been using for a long time was actually the Alien Eel.
Yeah.
And the story with the Alien Eel is actually that it's a pretty pretty close imitation of the Bulldog. We couldn't get the Bulldog in Europe 20 years ago, so, and it was really effective. But I wanted to create something that was better, just like Danny mentioned, just with a few tweaks. The inside harness, so that the inside harness wouldn't get ripped up so easy. I wanted to add a little secondary movement to the front of the bait, adding the small side fins. And then that perfect fall rate, so that when you were ripping it, it would start to fall in a way that the fins would move due to that perfect weighting. Mm-hmm. And that would create a lot more bikes. And I think the way Danny is using it is actually he's utilizing those small differences and getting a lot of bikes.
Yeah,
that's one thing too. I mean, with that Alien Eel, you don't want to call it a bulldog because yeah, it may look like it, but it does not fish like a bulldog.
No.
And you know, you have those two rudders on the top and the bottom of that bait. That makes that bait dart side to side, and you get those reactionary bites on a rubber bait, whereas you wouldn't necessarily on any other type of curl tail bait because you're getting that side to side and getting that triggering response, right? And I mean, that bait, people overlook it because it's a smaller bait. Mm-hmm. But the biggest muskie I have ever caught in my whole career, I caught on an Alien Eel.
That was 37 and a half.
Nine point seven pounder.
Danny's caught monsters on. If you remember, Danny, when you're in my boat in Canada this year, you open up my rubber box and it's just nothing but Alien Eels.
Mads. I opened his box and I am not kidding you. There was 75 Alien Eels in it.
Remember, I think I pillaged all of eBay for all the big ones that are left. You guys haven't had those for a while, but that's the interesting thing because people would look at that bait and go, okay, it's a bulldog, but it's not. The looks are deceiving on that bait because it just runs so differently. Exactly what you guys are saying.
Yeah, it's dialed in.
It's
not exactly a beautiful bait. It's not a beautiful bait. It is definitely not something that I'm proud of. But I can tell you that thing will catch a lot of fish.
Absolutely.
And it's the same. You asked where to start. So that was a very early. Mm-hmm. That's about soon have 20 years on it. So it's interesting that it's still catching so many fish. And I think moving forward to some of the newer baits that we brought out where Danny has been involved. When I work with Danny, it's very, very easy because he knows so well what he wants and mm-hmm. what we need. He can explain to me in a heartbeat what it is he wants. Mm-hmm. That makes my life so much easier because I go back in the lab and I build it and I keep doing it until it has what he needs, and then I add a little bit of extra.
Mm-hmm. Just dialed in.
Mad builds what I want and then he puts the flair on it.
Right. Yeah, and that's what it takes.
And that's what makes it so fun. When we made our blade program, I just knew that we had to do it a little bit different. We needed to think about casting distance into the wind. Mm-hmm. We need to keep think about having this immediate rotation. We needed to think about hardware. One of the things that I found coming into this musky fishing the last 3-4 years, like real, taking it real serious, mm-hmm. is the lack of attention to hardware on musky baits, which is a little bit strange. When you go out and you fish, you for the fish of 10,000 casts, you put all your energy, all your effort in getting this bite. But then when you look at the hooks and the hardware in general, it's not there.
Yeah, I agree. Most of the time, it's simply, it's underwhelming. And, not.
It really is.
Not even to the fish. Yeah.
No, look at the Bass World. Look what they do to make their, their hookup rate better. Look at what the kind of quality they use in general. I mean, and that's what we build into the Savage Gear bait. We use the top of the top of the hardware.
And one thing
I think that's important.
A conversation I had on the boat yesterday was actually about one of your baits, and you might, Mads, you're kind of heading that direction where we were talking about trolling. The hybrid pikes, right? With the breakaway hook systems out of the bottom. And you've had that mm-hmm. in the past where, and especially something people don't even think about, attention to detail, which there's a hook holder built into the Alien Eel, by the way, right? So your front hook has a hook holder. People, you know, if you've not realized that, you don't need magnets or anything. But the importance with some of these bigger rubber baits, which you've done on some of them, which is the breakaway harness. Most American anglers, North American anglers, don't get it that if you have the breakaway harness, you're going to lose far less fish that way. You know, with that, is that the intention of your design? Because I know on some of them, you have the harness that'll pull down so it hits this bait, and the weight of the bait's out of the equation. Is that the goal there? Or?
Well, if you think about it, right? I mean, when I was younger, I would think, okay, the muskie is just the big brother of the pike. It's the same fish. You can if you're really, really good, you make your lures and your the way that you fish, if you just imitate what they want to eat perfectly, you're going to get success. And boy, did I get my ass handed to me. That's not the way it works.
Right.
So the muskie is not a pike. The muskie is a completely different animal. It's one of the few fish, predator fish, where they decide when they want to eat. They decide if you're going to catch them or not. You can put as much effort and time in there. If they don't want to eat or some weird behavior pattern, you might as well stay at the dock. Where pike are opportunist feeders. If you present a lure in front of a pike and it believes it's a prey, there's a 90% chance it's going to attack it. And that's what we, all the Savage Gear lures was built that way. We were really into this pelagic trolling over very deep water, super gin clear, where the pike would come up from the temperature climb, they would sit and look up and they would see these giant profile baits and they would just come and hammer it.
Right.
As soon as they got in motion, they wouldn't stop. And the few fish that did stop, you know, they'd look at the bait. This was at the same time where I worked on the Water Wolf, this camera, so we could see how the pike would behave. If they just came up and followed the bait, they would actually eyeball it. Some fish would follow it more than a minute, eyeballing the bait, trying to figure out, is there hooks in this thing? What is this thing? So that's where that obsessive attention to detail came in. The breakaway system is because when these big fish attack, a whole day you get two bites. The last thing you want is this 50-inch fish go up and tail walk and use the weight of the bait to throw the hooks. That's the last thing you want. So that's where that line-through system came in. We perfected that line-through system so that 99% of the fish that would attack and get hooked in the bottom jaw would never, ever get off. And it works. Trust me, it works.
Yeah.
But the muskie have a different jaw system. They clamp down so hard that they bite so hard into these soft baits that if you don't rip the hell out of it and set the hook hard, or the hook is so big that it actually bites into the hook over the soft lure, you're going to lose them.
Yeah.
So I think that's why you also see we pay so much attention to the rigging and the hook size and all of this stuff. You can only learn on the boat.
Right.
You can only learn this on the water.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's really the core of the matter here is the attention to detail that Danny's always saying about when you guys are doing baits, and it's you see it when you fish it where it's just like, okay, the action's right, the hooks are right for the body when a fish, you know, and that's the thing. If you can have the right bait in the wrong configuration of hardware, and it's not as effective as it could be. And I think that's important that you guys are taking it at that level. You know, as far as developmental, I know Mads has got to get moving and grooving here. But, you know, as far as developmental stuff, you guys are obviously dominate Europe. If you don't realize that, these guys dominate Europe. Is there any cool stuff we're not seeing that you guys are doing over there? Is everything crossing over right now? Are you offering all the European baits here?
Well, Danny, when he sees the catalog, whenever I come over, I have stuff with me, you know. Danny just points out, I want this, I want this, I want this, you know. And that's true. We there's so many of the cool things from the European scene that we could use in North America. But of course, it's also we have to build the business. We have to set this up the right way. So we take it step by step, and we're so fortunate that we have the support of Pure Fishing and the way that they support us so that Danny and I build this at the right pace. It's very comforting. And I can tell you the lures that we just brought out, the Berber tube, you probably fished it, heard about it. Danny's brainchild. We just had time to perfect that so that we have those things that we need. And we bring out the crosstail, the soccer crosstail that you probably also heard about, turning out to be a fantastic soft rule for muskie, where we really build in those things that we just talked about, the right hardware, the right hook sizes, the perfect fall rate. One thing about musky fishing is that we fish so fast. It's a power fishing over the pike fishing because you want to cover water. You want to get down. And one thing that's 100% for sure is that the musky is a very reactional bite over the pike bite. So speed matters. Speed matters a lot. And you got to be able to fish the bait so that they run true or do exactly what you want, but at twice the speed at least and twice the aggressive on the rip and on the paws than on pike fishing.
Interesting. Well, very cool. Well, I know you got big plans today, so Mance, we appreciate you coming on the show. We'll harass Danny a little bit more, but we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Please. Hey, and Danny?
Yep.
Stay warm.
I will, man. It's good
to hear from
you. You guys have an awesome day, okay?
You too, buddy. Be good, man.
Take care.
All right, what do you we still got Danny here, guys. I apologize. Mads is, like we said, we'll figure out what part of Asia he was in later. I know there's a little noise floor there. I think Danny, is it possible he was just washing his hands in a truck stop the entire time?
I
kept hitting him here. He kept hitting the button on the hand dryer. I'm teasing. Now he's doing his best over there.
No, but I mean, it's very. It's like I said to the like the way they fish over there, and like that's one thing cool by working with him is like how much attention they pay to detail, and like he talks so much about that pike fishing and that realism, and being able to incorporate that realism into our bait, plus make it a reactionary and be able to fish it fast and get those bites. I mean, it's just it's an all around win having, and I mean, like I said, if I can dream it up or think it, he can build it. And one thing that's like I'm really noticing a lot of, if you notice with a lot of the rubber baits that Savage Gear builds and everything, it has a lot of like micro movement stuff to it that
right
make different noises and different sounds than just an, you know, like you take a curl tail bait. And yeah, it'll catch fish, but then you throw like a Savage Gear one. It has like the every fin has like a little boot on it, and it's got like different shapes of these boots. So it's throwing off all these different little vibrations and different noises that these fish that are looking at, you know, a rubber style bait have never felt before. They've never seen before, right? So like these whole these little micro movement things that you may think are just a gimmick, they actually can generate more bites for sure.
Which is like, you know, you look at Danny's burbot tube, you got little whiskers. He's got whiskers on him. Mr. Whiskers. But, you know, you look at it though, those things are moving. It's a visual, aided visual and probably vibrational. Like you're saying with the probably the biggest sleeper bait in musky fishing I've said forever, and you're telling Matt, is that freaking alien eel. You know, and your dad and I have argued, do they stop catching fish when they lose the side fins, to the point I've literally taken them where I have a bag of just like, you know, the little bass size grubs or whatever. If I lose a side fin, I just glue one in this hole where the fin came off.
You gotta have the ticklers on the side or they're useless, it seems like.
Yeah.
Why do you think I have like 100 of them stockpiled up in my basement too?
I know. Why are we telling everybody this? Whatever.
But like,
plus they're $12. That's the other thing.
That's what I'm getting at. They're like one of the cheapest rubber baits for musky fishing an angler could buy.
Yeah.
Like they're basically like throwaway musky baits for $12 compared to people are spending. You know, you look at some stuff now, you're spending $70-$80 for a rubber bait now.
That's scary.
You know, that gets chewed on.
Yeah. But it's kind of terrifying, and that's the thing. You're, you know, the Savage Gear price point is always good. But heck, man, while I have you here, let's just, you know, it's cold, it's all this, but yet again, both of us like tubes in a shocking twist, right? Jay likes tubes as well, but I got you. I don't know if we've done it. We haven't done it in a while. let's just compare notes on tubes. You're the bourbon tube guy. I'm the Kraken tube guy. Obviously, we like them. Danny, where would you say, if you were just going to shoot from the hip, when, where, and why with the bourbon tube or just tubes in general? Like, what is it always a go-to for you, or what's kind of your game plan with the tube?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the Kraken tube has an interchangeable weight system as well. I would say, you know, the Kraken has a slower fall, definitely, for sure. And, you know, you can't rip on it quite as aggressively as you can, you know, like any other rubber style tube. Uh-huh. I throw the Kraken, I catch fish on it. I tend to throw it when the fish are a little bit shallower.
Uh-huh.
And you know, you can take the weight out of that. You can throw it over top of the weeds. You know, and then like, you know, you have your rubber style tubes, like, you know, the Burbot tube, mm-hmm. or a Red October, whatever you may pick. You know, the nice thing about the Burbot tube is it has once again, it has an interchangeable weight system. So, I mean, you can fish that Burbot tube relatively shallow, and you could clip on the weight and you could get down too. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I throw, you know, Eagle Lake fish are a little bit different than, you know, a lot of places. You know that, Stephen. You've spent a lot of time up there. They tend to, a lot of times, be a little bit deeper in this and that. So, I mean, literally, I throw a tube from, you know, opening week all the way to, you know, ice up. Some days they don't want it as good as others, you know. Some days, you know, you got to play around with, you know, yeah, it's nice having the spinner on the back, but I've also flattened, you know, taken the spinner off and thrown them without spinners, and some mm-hmm. days they want that a little bit more. But, you know, I'll fish like your Kraken generally myself personally when I need a shallower tube presentation.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you get that little bit more hang with that little bit, you know, when you take the weight
the hump
out
of it. Yeah.
Yeah, you get that hang a little bit more, and you can keep it out of the weeds or on top of the shallow rocks a little bit better. I personally like. And then if I'm going, you know, that next step deeper, I generally switch to a rubber style tube myself. Like, but
when you're doing that, are you mainly? I've fished with you a bit and all this stuff, but like on the general end of things, you know, is it a matter of you with the rubber tube really? Deep, like getting aggressive with depth? Are you trying to cover as much of the water column as you can with, say, the Burbot tube? Or is it a matter of the added weight? Because like you said, the heavier bait, you can get a faster speed, more erratic action. Yeah.
You've made fun of me not only once but twice about how hard I fish things, right?
Yes.
How hard
you fish things, yes. I didn't say hard. I said tarred.
My whole deal is I like to get down and I like to work stuff fast. I like a heavy bait, and I want to be able to rip on it. I want to be able to get down there and rip on it versus having to kind of slowly fish it down. And yeah, you can get some bites by a slower presentation. Yeah, but generally, for, you know, unless the fish are really fired up, like in those down times, the down part of the day, is to get a fish to eat, you're looking for a reaction bite, right? Mm-hmm. And you got to fish it fast to get a reaction bite, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I generally like to fish heavier style baits to get down. But I mean, what you'll notice is I've seen it more times than I've seen it lots of times, is it's not rubber baits, any bait in general. And I think, I can't remember when we talked about this, you had something that kind of changed, kind of flipped in my, you know, you tripped the trigger and like, okay, that made sense. I can't remember when but anyway, is the depth of which you work that bait.
Like,
and people just think, I can fish a tube in the back of the boat. You can fish a tube in the front of the boat. We have different gear ratio reels, or you're fishing it faster than I am, or I'm fishing it faster than you. Uh-huh. And at just that, every day, finding that particular depth in which your bait is moving. I've seen it where your bait's coming in at 7 feet and you're literally not getting a follow. Your bait comes in at 10 or 11 feet and here they come. So pay, you know, and like, and that's one thing I pay a lot of attention to is at the depth of which my bait is coming in and getting that response of that fish and mimicking that cast after cast after cast and training right. these people. This is the speed of which your bait needs to come in at, right?
And I think that's a lot of where I was kind of steering with waiting, which, you know, the same thing of the heavier the bait, the quicker it's going to descend, the quicker you're going to get at depth, but you often have to work it really, really fast if it's really, really heavy. It's that we're saying the same thing. There's a dynamic between the weight of your bait, how erratic it can be, but it's appropriate target depth. And that's like, I think why both of us is like with wet, say it be the Burbot tube or the Kraken, it's apples, oranges, whatever. It's, you know, who cares? Me and Danny ain't fighting about them, so don't compare them. They use them as tools, but that what I'm getting is I think we both have figured out the problem in the same way where I need the versatility of the bait to hit those target depths, repeatability. And seeing it that way. But one thing I've noticed with you is boat positioning and cast length is super important. That wouldn't you say, like, as far as,
oh, 100%. And I mean, and now with the use of forward facing, it's just that much easier to know where you're at all the time. But I mean, as a rule of thumb, I would say most times I'm about 65 to 70 feet off the pinnacle of what I want to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then by then, you know, and an average cast for an average client, I would say is about 80 feet. So your first, you know, 2-3 rips of whatever, mm-hmm. if you're throwing a jerk bait, you're coming, you know, at 2 to 4 feet down off the top of the structure. And then by the time, you know, you're 20 feet from the boat, you know, you've covered that whole drop and then, you know, a little bit of the flat. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised how many times, especially this fall, that fish would come out of the mud that you would have no idea exist. You know, 10 feet from the boat, they'd be laying on the bottom. You'd just see them sky straight up. And right. that's one thing, yeah. like when I'm running a spot, especially on Eagle, I'm trying to stay off the structure by at least 20 feet because there's a lot of times them fish are not, they're not always all sitting on the rock.
Ain't that
there's a
true.
Lot of times they're sitting on that mud to rock transition. And if you're running the edge, you're either driving over them fish or they're on the other side of your boat. What, so it's very deep.
You say that, but something that just popped in my head, not trying to cut you off, but something that I think is important where let's say we're on a quote unquote, we're on a tube bite, right? You know, the three of us, me, you, and Jay are in a boat, and we're dialed in. We got a couple in the net or whatever, and we're on tubes. But like you're talking about that positioning on the outside edge, once we break away from structure, it's kind of anybody's guess whether to suspend why it's so important to have a follow-up bait. You know, because say, let's say...
A lot of these fish that I caught this year, I mean, a lot of the structure, I mean, the boat's in 22, 23 feet where mm-hmm. the mud is. You know, you got 20 feet to where the rock starts, and then it's climbing up, you know, flattening up, and then eventually hitting the pinnacle or the shore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many times I saw, you know, the fish, the bait, 5-8 feet below the surface, and that fish sky, you know, laying flat on bottom in 22, 23 feet of water, and that fish sky straight up and eat the bait right at your foot. At the boat, like mm-hmm. it's wild. People don't realize when a fish really wants to eat a bait, it's like over. How far they will really actually come.
That I think with scope, I've mentioned it before on the podcast, but with scope of like hearing people talk about, he came straight off the bottom. Like you, people have seen him come vertical. You've watched that on LiveScope where it's like a lightning bolt in reverse. It's like lightning. Yeah. You can't tell it's a fish. There's just a streak, and he's on. You know, when they when they want it, they want it. The rest of the time, we're out there washing baits, praying we can get one in an eight. You know, with these, you know, these jerk or the jerk bait style, tube style baits, things of that nature. I've seen a couple things floating around where that reminded me. I actually had a client on the boat yesterday that brought one that reminded me of actually like a Swimming Joe, where even some of this old stuff's coming back, where it's like just baits that are falling. You know, do you think, Danny, just out of sheer curiosity, do you think it's the tube like the profile of that, or is just the action, because it just, we weren't doing it for so many years and now it's been 5-6 years of this.
I think it's good. You know, like there's, in my opinion, there's two ways baits move that generate bites, you know, that trigger that instinctual response. One, you have the side to side. So like when they're following that, you watch a National Geographic, you watch any show.
It's all Jay watches.
You know, out there.
All day.
A predator follows a bait, and then the minute that bait turns sideways, what do? They eat it, right? Yeah. So you have a sideways motion, that's a trigger, and then you have a fall or an up motion, that is also a trigger. Any way that they can create an angle to eat that bait, they like that too, because it falls head first so fast, that gives them the opportunity to crush that bait by the head.
Yeah.
It's not swimming straight away from them, right? So I always keep that in mind when I'm working baits. Okay, you know, other than, you know, you hum like up on Eagle or any lake in general, you catch some fish that eat bucktails out on the cast, but they follow a bucktail to the boat. Where do they grab it? On the turn. Why do they grab it on the turn? Because the bait finally turned sideways to them.
Which is,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're preaching the truth, because if you think about it, you're talking about the motion of baits, right? And if you're if you're conceptualizing baits, I'm looking here at the walls of the bait cave. So you got dive and rise. They go up, they come down. They up, they down. Well, a really good tightener, a really good suic will dive and rise, but it'll come up at weird angles, right?
Yep.
We look at twitch baits, slammer, crane, you know, all those baits. Well, really good ones, when you twitch them, they come up at an angle. And what I'm getting at is, you continue down the line, alien eagle for a rip bait, it's going to fall off at a weird angle. A tube, kraken, burbot tube, whatever. When you hump them up, they pause, they do a weird angle, which is the illusion of a directional change, is what I've always thought. Is that that predator thinks it's about to get away, therefore I must now. And it's, to me, I hear reaction strike. I'm not concerned about the verbiage, but it is getting them to pull the trigger. It's getting them, I guess, to react, but it's going, okay, now's your chance. Now's your chance. Now's your chance. And the more chances
and the more times you can get your bait to do that on a cast, the more bites you're going to get.
Which is, I was going to say, before you were on, I was talking to Jay about trolling, right? Which is, I want the shortest lines possible at my target depth when trolling, which allows me more control of the bait to create more moments.
Yep,
and exactly. I think me and you, obviously we've spent enough time talking and bullshitting on the boat and thinking about it. I believe you and I approach it the same way, which is like, I don't care what the bait is. How many moments does it create? I don't care what the paint job is. I don't care if it's pretty. If it creates that
flea mode,
fleeing, yeah, whatever, the evasive thing and the wounded thing, and just presenting itself where it's like, and again, Danny, you said, here's the head of the bait. It's all, I don't know. I mean, I would say I'm guessing, this is not something I'm keeping track of, but I probably should. Saying it out loud would be interesting to add to like my notes. Headshots versus grabbing it from behind
on a tube,
on any bait. Like if you look,
I mean rubber style baits. I
it's
mean,
all it's headshots. 90,
it's not 90-10.
90-10,
right?
Yeah. But like trolling here the last few days, I could take the back hooks off. No, we need one hook. Forget about it, right?
Yeah.
I feel that way, like whether it be Kraken or Danny's tube or whatever. I honest to God, I think if I fish tubes with one hook, I think I might miss one or two fish a year.
Yep. And so here's one thing I wanted to kind of touch on, like as an angler, you know, I see guys and I'm trying, like when I'm on the water, I'm always trying to teach people to, you know, work a bait properly. Yeah, you can grab any bait and work on it and rip on it, and you know, you're going to catch some fish eventually and you're going to get some success. But like when you're throwing those baits and when you're ripping a bait, and if you're not getting any sideways motion to that bait, try your change your presentation up in the way of which you're ripping the bait. You know, maybe not such a hard rip, maybe a little bit shorter, quicker rip, maybe a softer rip, and give that bait slack in order to let that bait work. And you're going to generate a lot more bite when you can get that bait to move sideways. It doesn't have to move sideways every rip, but, you know, 2-3 times within a cast, if you can get it to do one odd side and turn sideways or up or down, it's going to generate more bites than if you were just, you know,
rip reel,
and not giving that bait any pause or any slack in which to get that bait to turn sideways. You're just not going to generate as many bites.
You know,
it's just plain and simple.
I was actually literally yesterday had the same conversation, right? Guy, and we were kind of talking about some of these same things, working on some pull pause baits. And I told him, and it's no knock, because you'll see like videos and things of this nature where, you know, here it is, it's late season Minnesota, and these guys are just casting and blasting pounders, right? What's a pounder? You know, you really have to hog on that bait or you're going to be stuck on something, right? And there's a time and a place for that. This Minnesota heave-ho, right? That can have its time and a place, but I find like pretty much all baits, the more finesse, and I think the trick from twitch baits to rubber baits to any of them is how to get the action out of bait, like you're saying, Danny, with the slightest amount of slack created. That's what I like when you pick it. Like, Danny, let's say you pick up a new bait, right? You've never seen X, Y, and Z bait, right? Like, what are you looking for? Because, like, for me, I'm typically going, okay, what is this doing with my typical, say, crankbait motion or my jerkbait motion? Because you have that feel for just that tiniest modicum, that tiny attention to details in the slack. Is that like where's your head at when you're looking at something?
Well, I mean, obviously I watched it, and I try working it as hard as I can work it and see what the bait.
I'm just sending you my stuff from now. If it survives the Danny test, right? So,
and a lot of times it, working a bait hard is actually you're working against yourself. Mm-hmm. Like for one instance, I'm going to use, you know, your Titan. Mm-hmm. You work that bait hard, you're working against yourself.
Yep.
You know, 3 to 4 inch little twitches, you know what I mean? And then, you know, maybe a foot longer every once in a while, right, to get that bait to do what you want it to do the actual side to side, you know, get it to do erratic stuff. The harder you work it, you're actually hurting yourself. Mm-hmm. So, before you pick up a bait and start chucking it, you know, take a few minutes and throw it where you can actually see the bait and figure out what the best way to work that bait is. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, I see it all the time. Like, just because you're ripping on a bait really hard,
it can look like,
and you're
shit,
working really hard, doesn't mean you're working the bait right.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. That makes, you know, a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. What is, you know, the bait?
People have this conception where they think the harder they reel on a bucktail and the harder they jerk on a bait, it's going to generate more bites. That's not always the case. And most times it's not the case.
Have you noticed the theme between our opposing baits, Danny? That I'm just really lazy.
I've noticed that. I want to create a bait that I literally can eat a Twizzler with one hand and jerk and reel it in with the other.
You know?
That's Stephen Paul's motto.
Listen, can I catch one sitting down? You know, it's funny because you're definitely going for a dip. For me, it's like, how lazy can, like with the Titan, I'm getting a super erratic action without having to work hard for it, you know, or the Kraken, same thing, super erratic action without having to work hard for it. And, you know, Danny's going to put a cinder block with a bulldog tail on there and call it good some days. I mean, I'm
Well, and a lot of it is just, like, you know it, but these Eagle Lake fish they're just a different breed of muskie. And I mean, I wish I would probably have a lot different, you know, outlook on muskie fishing if I fished, you know, some other areas or different lakes. I just, unfortunately, I don't have time. And, you know, I do get that little glimpse when I fish Lake of the Woods there, you know, a couple, two, 3 days a year, and it opens my eyes. It really does. And I learn a lot of stuff from fishing other bodies of water. It's just, I make my living on Eagle. And to be honest with you, It's hard to go anywhere with the caliber of fish that live on that lake.
Yeah. You're in the Super Bowl every day, baby. <You know? laughs> That's the thing, which is, I'm just, you know, just teasing, not knocking it, but you know, that's the thing. If sometimes you, there's a time and place for all of it. I love what you said though about the importance of looking at the bait, because you know, pre-internet, which is seems crazy to some, but not that far off for me, and where there wasn't a place where you could go to say, like, you know, Jay Shorts or Danny does stuff for Savage. I'm always doing the videos for Muskie Shop. Well, here's the basics of how to work the bait, where you kind of had to come up with it yourself. Here you got this new bait and you go, what do I do with this? You know, and that, I think that's a lot of the creative retrieves have been lost on some, not young muskie fishermen, but people who knew the sport of, like, you just had to take a bait and figure out what to do with it. You know, there's no owner's manual with, say, a reef hog. There might be like one paragraph on the back of the bait box that said, do this, you know, but you had to really observe the bait.
That's rare. Yeah. Yeah. Most of the time it's just somebody tooting their horn about how great it is. You know,
there's right.
15 tournaments under its belt. You know, it's just like, well, how do you work it?
Yeah. What were you saying, Danny?
It's funny you mentioned reef hog. I remember when I was a little shaver fishing with Steve-O, and you open up his live well, guess what was floating around in the live well? About a dozen reef hogs.
Yep.
Soaking water?
Yep.
Soaking water. That's classic.
Yep. Nothing better than buying a bait, and you got to let it soak in your live well. The hooks are rusted before you can even start to throw it.
Old school.
Yeah, the man, they caught fish, and what, you know, we've talked about them a bunch, but you know, that's the thing. It's better now that we have the information. But yeah, you know, you just got to look at these things, and you know. I don't know. I'll shut up in a second. But I'll say this, Danny, talk about opening baits up, right? Which is what I kind of call it, getting that side to side. I don't want anybody to get the misconception that we're looking for this big left to right glide bait look. You know, I think it can be subtle at times where, yeah, you want it to fall. Sometimes you want them falling off hard at a hard left, and then maybe it goes left twice or whatever, but you know, it doesn't have to be superbly pronounced. It just can't be this straightforward wet tube sock routine, you know? Yep. And one thing I do, pretty much every bait that I'm throwing, I'm always putting, not always, but the majority of my baits, I'm adding split rings pretty much to everything to help open most things up. Danny, do you do the same? Do you add split rings to pretty much all your baits or?
Like, not on my front hook. I will on some of, like, my back hooks.
I meant to the line tie.
Oh, no.
Really?
No, I'm generally the opposite. I like going snap straight to the bait. Not all the time, but I found some baits work better without a split ring for some reason. Okay.
What ones come to mind?
Well, for one, like, I find with a tube, you get less fouling by going straight snap to a tube or a split ring.
Okay.
And, like, some crankbaits, like, I even have, like I'm just going to use a grandma, for instance. I find I get better action side to side out of a grandma ripping it than if I were to with a split ring for some reason. That's just me, though.
No, and it could be a rod angle thing or just how you present.
Yeah.
You know, but see, for me to get that, it's like, you know, I get it. Jay just sent me a box full of shallow invaders a couple weeks ago, right? Staple bait in my boat. Everybody throws a shallow invader. First thing I do, big 7-aught. Muskie Shop Super 7-aught on Overwell. Every one of them, right? Everyone. Because it seems to me, with that that softer touch, that slack linier thing.
Well, you don't work the bait very hard either. You need all the help you can get.
Yeah, well, when you're laying down, it's hard, right? So you really people are like, sir, is that a butt seat? No, that's a pillow with a pedestal bottom on it. So I just kind of lay there and ask the client, drive over, see that waypoint, drive to that. I'll be laying up here. But I get a better side to side out of the bait when it's got a split ring. I don't know. Like I said, that's kind of like my kind of go-to there, but it's interesting you see it different, which is just how it, there's a million ways to skin the cat, and I think that's why Danny, yeah, and I like, that's why we kind of click, because I respect the way he does it. He doesn't respect the way I do it, but he's on the podcast nonetheless, you know.
But to go back to split rings though too, what I thought you were talking about with baits is like I have some gliders that mm-hmm. I like to throw, and on the like the gliders with like a curl tail on the back, mm-hmm. so like a tap dancer or something like mm-hmm. that, I'll actually add a second split ring and then my hook. And for if you do get the fish on one, it gets the hook back just a little bit farther, and mm-hmm. two, you get a little bit more motion when they're spinning, right?
Right. Yeah.
Except for a little bit more hang, a little bit more, you know, you get a little further back if they do nip or something like that.
Well, which is something, it's funny you say that, like further back, shallow invaders, that's a great way to stop that hook foul, which I do two split rings and I'll bury the hook in the tail, right? But the two, but having the two split rings doesn't tighten it up, you know what I'm saying? Because it's not like it's wearing it. The tail has the exact same motion because you have the two rings there. They're not pulled tight to one each other, but yeah, you can move the hooks back. Jay made some friendship bracelets out of split rings one time. It was amazing. It was amazing. Jay, could you make a suit of armor for me out of split? That'd be like chain mail. What do you think?
Make them out of Colorado blades, baby.
Okay, we have a project we need to put together for Elmer. We just need to make.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, literally just a suit of armor made out of split rings and Colorado blades.
Shoot a new video.
He'd
love to do it, too.
He'd love to do it, folks. But anyway, mm-hmm. well, Danny, you were telling about the woes of the ice fishing. We'll have to check in on that. But checking in, you sent it to me. You and Coop got together, right?
Yeah, we talked last night and just kind of shot the shit a little bit. So there'll be some talk about, you know, the season, how things wrapped up, some stuff for looking forward to next year, some things that we learned, you know, this year. That because this, like everybody knew, this year was just an odd off year now. Or, you know, a weird year. Are things going to continue to trend that way? Or are we going to kind of have a normal year and things kind of go back? Unfortunately, I think, you know, personally, just the way the world is spinning these days, it's just going to keep continuing to get weirder and weirder and weirder and weirder. And we're going to have to keep adapting every year to remain successful. Personally, the way I look at things, there is no normal anymore. What's normal, right? So, so yeah, we talked about, you know, some stuff that we learned this year, what we're going to keep in our back pocket for next year. And, we talked a little bit about ice fishing and that too as well. So it was a good talk.
Cool. Yeah. That'll be on the Muskie Canada podcast. And I guess they're going to kind of do some monthly stuff, like we've said, through this, because there's very few people other than idiots like me still fishing here. But anyway, well, good deal. Since it's weird, Danny, one more question. And Jay, I'll ask you the same. Sure. You know, is it aliens over New Jersey right now or just drones?
Well, I'm going to say it's not aliens, Steve. Okay, it's not check. Aliens. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, I'm just curious. Just getting your thoughts, seeing how much tinfoil you'd brought out here as of late. But anyway, all right, guys, we're idiots. Guys, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Right, all right, now. Danny.
I sleep an entire tinfoil outfit, Danny. Every night.
I can see that.
Later, tighter.
Protect yourself.
Later.
Bye.
Last night a little musky came chasing
help from above.